The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And I would like to start with this meditation with a reference point for it. That's a wisdom reference point. And there's a tendency in this early Buddhist tradition that I kind of practice in to put a lot of value on the recognition and the awareness of dukkha, often translated as suffering. And one of the ways of thinking of suffering, stress, all the different forms it takes, if you want to go be a nature photographer in the plains and the savannas of Africa, and you want to take lot pictures of lots of animals, you would be a lot of work to kind of walk around looking for them all over, everywhere. But if you place yourself at the watering hole, all the animals have to come to the watering hole, and then you can get all your pictures. Don't stretch the analogy, just... So suffering is that way. Suffering is like the watering hole, and everything you need to learn in the Dharma is found there. But the wisdom part of the practice is to become a better person by attending or recognizing it. So to become attuned to the tension, the stress, even the physical feelings of what suffering is, not the big stories, but the immediacy of it. How then is that kind of like a maybe a razor's edge that we ride, that either we fall into it, collapse into it, or suffer more, react to it in a way that's not beneficial? And what way does wisdom support us to actually become better through it, to be freer, to grow in it, to discover how to step into the challenges of our life in order to learn, in order to be transformed in a beneficial way? And to learn that skill as a chaplain is invaluable, because with chaplaincy, we are constantly going to be in the presence of suffering, our own and others. But to be aware of it for ourselves and to be able to turn towards suffering in a beneficial way, that might tell us that we should turn away, we need a break. But we first as we want to learn from it and study it, this is one of the great skills that it would protect the chaplain, and also provide a chaplain with a lot of the skills, a lot of the information they need to be able to care for others. So I'll talk more about this. But so as we do this meditation, maybe it'll occur that you'll have some stress, some little bit of tension, some tightness, something, or it could be big. And can you find that razor's edge and find a way to be with it that is beneficial, that's dharmic, that's freeing, that's something to learn from, some new way of being that's not it's the opposite of reactivity or being caught in it? And it can be as simple as, you know, if we feel a little bit challenged with a distracted mind, we might feel some tension around that or some kind of disappointment or something. But right there, that's the razor's edge. And so which side do you go? How do you navigate it so that you find a way that you feel freer, feel easier, feel more at peace, more like you're learning from it how to be a better person? So that's the encouragement for this meditation. And we'll sit quietly for about 15 minutes. So welcome everyone, and those of you who just arrived, and welcome, and those of you on Zoom, it's Sharon and Alan, and so just to feel like something more is needed than just jumping right in, so acknowledging the occasion and the rain and how we're somehow, those of you who are brave or willing to manage with the roads, thank you. I don't assume that it's easy. Sharon's road that she would have taken here, I think, is closed intermittently, or it's often closed to Highway 17. So, and there's lots of people who are challenged, and certainly a lot of people who are afraid. They've already been challenged by the rain, or they've seen what's going on in California and elsewhere. And so they feel the concern about themselves and what's coming, and will this be the next big one? Since the weather is unpredictable, and he says, will this be another big dump, and what will happen? And will I go outside and find my car? You know, a tree has fallen to my car. So anyway, so there's all kinds of, you know, it's kind of a significant time to where the times we're in, the circumstance we're in, is here in the room with us. And it means that some of our members are not here because of it, and some of our members are on Zoom. Jennifer had a medical appointment this today that she couldn't come this morning, and it was planned that way, but when she saw the Zoom option, she decided that she doesn't want to drive all the way down from Marin down here. So she'll come and join us on Zoom. And Paul is in Brazil for a family visit, so he's not here. And a few people who are not here, like AJ and Letisa, they might join us on Zoom for a little bit. I don't know what their status is. They've been communicated with, so. So, anything that any of you want to say at this juncture so we can start, or you feel ready to start? I'll take silence to mean, there's some different ways I can interpret it, of course, but I will interpret it that we are ready to start. So, good. So the parami for today is wisdom. And wisdom might be the best translation of the term. Sometimes I think of it more in terms of insight, because wisdom has a little bit connotation, at least for me, that it can be learned knowledge, learned wisdom. You know, something happened to you, and now you know something from your experience, and so you bring that knowledge with you, and you're able to deal with things more skillfully because of past experience. And so it's, you know, learned wisdom that you bring with you, but it's a little bit learned, so it's a little bit static. As opposed to insight, which, as I understand it, is always in the present moment. It's always about seeing what's here. It's the act of seeing in a clear and deep way. And the kind of transformative wisdom that the early tradition had was this kind of, the transformative wisdom, I think insight works better. But wisdom also is more broad and inclusive. It includes so many different ways of being wise. My favorite definition of a wise person coming from the earliest tradition is a wise person is someone who's concerned for the welfare of themselves, the welfare of others, the welfare of self and others, and the welfare of the whole world. And it's interesting that each of those is specified distinctly. So this begins with oneself, and in its early tradition, there's a lot of emphasis on self-understanding. Yes? Oh, thank you for helping with that.
Good. She said she was having trouble. She's having trouble with her power and Wi-Fi.
Uh-huh. So, AJ, welcome. Are you? You want? Can you somehow indicate you're here? Maybe turn off your mic. Yeah.
Sorry. Hi. I'm setting things up. Thank you for doing this so much.
Great. So you're here and in the room, and we have a 27-inch monitor here to be able to see what's on the Zoom screen. So when right now we see your initials, for people here, you'll feel like you're part of the group.
Thank you. I have to go fix a plug, but I'll be right back.
Okay. Great. So a wise person, this is the distinction between, you know, all these three things, that caring for oneself, being concerned with one's own welfare, is prioritized by the Buddha only because that creates a better condition for the person to do the other tasks, to be concerned for the welfare of others. And then it's fascinating idea of concern with the welfare of self and others. And there's no explanation in the ancient texts what this means, but I like to interpret it means the we. It means the relationship we're in. And so we want to also care for that relationship, which is distinct from any one individual. And then the whole world. There's no limit to our care. There's no limit of our concern. We're not like bounding it. And that becomes very important for a chaplain, because a chaplain's going to run into people in many different walks of life, many different situations that normally you wouldn't encounter. And so this idea that you're actually available for the whole world, for me, means you're kind of ready for anything. And that we've kind of set ourselves up for the whole world. So no matter what happens, if you wear the badge of a chaplain, you're kind of like the go-to person. For certain situations, you're like the last stop. You know, that no one else is going to turn. Everyone's going to turn towards you in certain circumstances, because it doesn't involve medical care. It doesn't involve fixing a broken down car. It belongs to a dimension of our human life that is kind of spiritual, or some deep existential issues that no one else feels like they have the authority or the place or the conduit for that connection. No one set themselves up for that. And so people turn towards the chaplain. So, you know, it could even be in a family situation where they know you're in chaplaincy training. Everyone's there as some loved relative died, and everyone's like, what do we do now? And they look they look to you, because, well, you're the chaplain. You will know what to do. Or you're on an airplane and someone dies, or someone has a baby or something, and everyone's like, what do we, after everything's settled, what do we do? And someone goes, well, you're a chaplain. You'll know what to do. And you'll do a prayer, or you'll do a blessing, or you'll do something that kind of cares for people there. There's certainly limits to this, and you don't have to expect you have to do everything, but the principle that is really dear to me, I cherish, is the idea that when we're in this role, then we're actually set ourselves up to be available to whatever comes. And then we have to be wise for that, so caring for the whole world. So, wisdom. Usually Paul gives a talk on wisdom, and he gives usually wonderful talks. And he always gives wonderful talks, and he will distinguish between three kinds of wisdom. And I'm not going to do the same, exactly same three, but it's based on the same idea. So there's the wisdoms that you, the things that you can learn. And classically, it had to meant you're learning the teachings. And then there's a, what you, the wisdom that comes from practicing. And that's the experiential part. And I'll tell you more about that. And then there's the wisdom of that comes from realization, the wisdom that comes from understanding something deeply. And in that regard, the sequence of the paramis, we're not quite following for this year, so it begins with generosity, which is generally involves other people, maybe other beings, the world. You can be generous to yourself, I suppose, but the usual orientation is that it has to do with how you live in the world. And to learn healthy generosity is to help establish healthy relatedness, healthy social connections. So that's how it begins. It doesn't begin by going into a cave and meditating. It begins by how you live together with others. And once you start feeling connected to others through generosity, it becomes kind of natural to have a warm, human, heartfelt connection to people to some degree. Because generosity belongs to that world of the heart, real generosity. And so then it makes sense to live with the interest in not harming people. Of course you don't want to harm the people you have this heart connection to. So the second parami is ethics, we did in November. The third one, which is coming in the next month, is renunciation. Once you have some sense of not wanting to harm, then you have to let go of the tendencies to harm. Let go of the ways that you live your life that causes harm to others. And there's layers of subtlety and grossness of how this works. Just interrupting someone as they're speaking is a kind of harm. So some kind of letting go is necessary, some kind of holding back, not restraining. Some kind of renunciation is needed in order to live in the aspiration, live in the heart's wish not to cause any harm to oneself or others. The wonderful thing about renunciation is that you learn, it isn't just that you're deprived of something, and you know that's a drag to renounce something, but this sincere, heartfelt realization, this is not useful, this doesn't serve me, I'll let go of it, gives us a palpable sense of relief from that clinging, relief from that attachment, relief from that impulse that we had that wasn't useful. And the palpable, embodied, heart-filled kind of feeling of that freedom, of that release, of that lack of clinging, that is a phenomenally important reference point. That becomes, in practice, becomes a really important reference point. And it can be talked about in so many different rich ways. It's such a valuable experience, non-clinging. Some people, like Mahayana Buddhists, might say an experience of emptiness. And that gives it a kind of a certain cachet or a certain, you know, value. But there's something we experience and know that that is the wisdom, that provides wisdom. And so now we can talk about, in reference, now we know something. We know something from our practice, something valuable, something precious. How do I live this? How do I stay close to it? How do I tip from the razor's edge of the life that I live on? How do I not fall into more suffering, more reactivity? How do I use this reference point of freedom, of non-clinging, of emptiness? How do I use this so that when I'm challenged in life, I benefit from it, that opens me, I'm transformed by it. Not just like cope with it, but how can I make it part of practice? And so, if the sense of real of freedom, letting go, renunciation is strong enough, I think that for many people, that becomes kind of like the heart's aspiration to live that way. And so that's the task of wisdom, is to understand that and find our way with it. So when we look at these three forms of wisdom, learning, experience, and transformation. These are all important for it all, and important for chaplaincy. And so how do you be wise in offering spiritual care? So the first one, learning, you can, you know, read all the chaplaincy books and learn a lot of different things. But the real art of it is enter into a relationship with someone, into a situation, and be in a learning mode. What do I have to learn here? You know, who is this person I'm with? And there's many things to learn, to be attuned to. And you don't have to go through the list. But the hope is that just simply the availability, your availability to learn, to pay attention, to show up with a certain humility, you'll start taking in and registering all the different things that need to be learned. But one attitude that I think is invaluable is, I offer it in two different ways. One is, whoever you're with, don't assume that you're the one who knows, who's going to fix them or is going to teach them or do something. Assume they're your teacher, that they have something to teach you. That respects them. And in that regard, I think also when you're working with someone, being with someone as a chaplain, that it's kind of like the American consumer attitude, that the customer is always right. Maybe that diminishes this to make that reference. But the idea that like this person is always right, this person's great, this person's a wonderful person. And those two things, this person's like my teacher here, I'm here to learn something, to be transformed, be changed for the better here. What's here that's available? This person's always right in a certain kind of way. Maybe there's better language for it. Is a very important attitude, I think, for meeting the whole wide range of diverse people you're going to meet that are so different from you, have whole different backgrounds and life experiences that you want to be very humble about, and not kind of assume that you know. It's called cultural humility, where you don't assume that just because everyone shares the same culture as you. And you can cause a lot of harm that way. But to see the person as a teacher, or see the person as always right, and that you're learning what's going on here, who is this person and what do they have and what's going on, is one of the protections from causing harm in this role because of how different we all are. But so begin by going in to learn. And so then as a chaplain, one of the questions for you is, what interferes with your ability to have that openness, to take in, to let things register, to start by learning? Do you go in with anxiety and already thinking about, I need to say the right thing, and like, what was I supposed to say? And you're kind of like caught up in the dynamics of it all, so you're not really there in an open way to learn and to receive. You know, it might be that that's, you know, the most important part of chaplaincy, is your willingness to not know, to be available, to be registered, take in the whole situation, including yourself. And leaving yourself out of the picture is dangerous. So how do you listen to yourself? How do you find out what's going on here? Maybe today you're also one of your best teachers, but not the normal you. Maybe there's another part of you that you don't really listen to. So you get a little bit out of your usual maybe, you know. I don't know what. Maybe occasionally you have an odd mind. So out of your usual odd mind. And maybe there's some deeper wisdom here, some deeper to understand. So what's going on here? And so just simply that availability to learn in all directions changes how you show up. Changes you, because you're not going to be asserting yourself. And then, but in addition to that, then there's the wisdom that comes from experience. The wisdom that comes by integrating what you're learning. And this is usually considered the wisdom of practice. So once you're taking something in, well, then how do you hold that in awareness? How do you hold that in your care and your mindfulness? How are you changed by the encounter? How are you taking it in and processing it? Is there reactivity? Do you have some difficult emotions that come up because this is difficult, the situation that you're in? And then how are you going to practice with this and change and work with this? And the idea of learning from integration or practicing with it or from the experience of it all means that you also have to be present. It also requires a certain willingness to take time to really come from a place where you feel it all experientially and allow it to be processed and really take it into account. And in this regard, there's two things that are important. One is now it's really important to pay attention to what's happening in this psychophysical body. I say it that way because rather than saying what's happening to you, so that you can a little bit step out of the normal me mode, but to what's happening in this psychophysical body that's processing this and experiencing being changed by it. And this razor's edge between more suffering and less suffering, how do I be with this? Do I know myself well enough to see, yes, I'm being changed, and I'm becoming grumpy from all this, impatient? Or, yes, this is challenging, and I could see that I have a tendency for impatience, but how do I practice with this? How do I open to it? What do I bring forth so that actually it's beneficial for me and beneficial for them? So this is the practice with it, the wisdom of practice. And then the wisdom of realization, and this is a fascinating one because it has to do kind of like what I talked about renunciation. It has to do with what we learn, what we tap into, a source within that has its own process, its own understanding, its own movement that doesn't belong to the usual conceptual world that we might be living in and thinking about. Maybe it's intuitive. Maybe it's a place of feeling coming from the depth inside of us or coming from the Dharma for people who are Dharma practitioners. The Dharma is figuring out what to do here. So what's this, what's a source of wisdom that comes from not knowing, from a free place? What's a source of wisdom that comes from letting go deeply, but learning, having contact with the situation, experiencing the situation fully? Is there something that some source inside of you that responds that wouldn't be in the normal way if you're thinking it out and planning it out? And so I rely a lot on this kind of wisdom. And what I do here is if it's a little bit odd what I want to say or do, I always check it. There's a check and balance system. I say, I'll wait, do I really want to say this? Is this really right? And sometimes in certain situations I'm in, only when the same thought comes up three times might I kind of take it seriously, even though it felt right the first time. But it is a little unusual to be this direct or this say something like this, or a little unusual. It could be something simple like, I don't know what to do for this person. This person is really suffering a lot. And they're really caught up in their suffering, and they almost hardly recognize me. They're just telling me about all this. What if I take that beautiful bouquet of flowers next to them on the table and put it in their lap? Oh, I don't know if I should do that. Okay, so we continue for a while longer. And then the bouquet. And then a little bit longer. That would be really, that would be the thing to do. And then I might say, thank you. I really feel what you're saying. It must be really hard for you. I have this thought that's a little unusual that might be interesting to try or something. And it has to do with your flowers. Would you be willing to let me try to do something here? Or can I bring the flowers to you or something? Just kind of ask permission. So, and say it tentatively, like, this is a little unusual, but don't diminish it, but just the right balance. And then the permission then like put the flowers in the person's lap, and suddenly, like, you know, it's a whole different world for the person. You know, they're not so lost in their self-concern, and you've broken the trance of self-preoccupation, and then maybe you can have a different kind of conversation with them. So I don't know if that's ever, I've never done that. It just came to my mind now, but this idea that the wisdom beyond wisdom, the wisdom that comes from really having let go of self, let go of attachments, let go of preoccupations, let go of planning, and is able to kind of be quiet enough or empty enough or free enough that things well up from sources inside that is not your usual place of operation. That also requires availability. It requires being willing to be there without knowing, willingness to learn, to feel, to be kind of not assertive, not caught in some way, but some kind of empty way or some kind of free way. What are the deeper sources of inspiration that comes from you in that situation? And then to have the checks and balance to check that out. It's not a few people who trust their intuition too much without doing the check and balance, without checking, is this really the right thing for this person? And one of the interesting things that I find happens to me is that I meet with many people in a row sometimes, and I'll have something that I'll say or do that's coming from that source, and that seemed nice, seemed right. And then the next person that comes to talk to me, I have the same intuition for the same thing. And then I wonder, Gil, are you really connected? Are you really, you know, or are you just kind of like on a, you know, just kind of like in love with your idea, or are you only, you know, like fallen into a habit here, or so like maybe then I'll wait for the fourth time it comes up or something. But so that's the introduction to this parami of wisdom. Very important for chaplaincy to have some sense of this. For today, I'll say it's the most important chaplaincy parami. It turns out every parami is the most important one. I can be so enthusiastic for each of them. So now I thought we could do some exercise or some discussion around this. And so the we'll do kind of a few different topics. Hopefully we can do some dyads. Might be one group of three, and maybe the three of you. I don't know if Alan can manage to participate, but maybe the three of you can be one group on Zoom. I'm looking at my screen here. So the first question to discuss between the two of you, or to talk about, is what are your common tendencies that you might have on a blue moon or whenever it is where you're not available to learn, you're not available to take in the person you're with, to be present and discover and be available and open to the situation? What are the common tendencies you have that interfere with that? Is that clear enough? So those of you on Zoom, you can go ahead and do that, and it'll probably take about 7 minutes or so. And I propose that rather than you tell a long story about how this works and why this works for you, if you tell the story you already know, this is not for the purpose of informing or educating the person you're with. This exercise is for the purpose of you hearing yourself speak about it. And if you know the story, you know the story. You don't have to tell the story. Just get to the point, kind of. But only make one point at a time and go back and forth, or groups of three, just go around and around. Because so you can be changed by by what you hear from the other person. Because this idea of learning, being available, experiencing and learning, integrating, taking it in, is always relevant in all situations. So in this exercise as well, you want to, you know, and it might be right here in this exercise, you'll see how you interfere with being available, learning, because you're rushing to tell your story or something. Make sense? So after about 7 or so minutes, I'll ring a bell and then offer you another question to maybe do the same thing. And so you're welcome to go ahead and get started. And you know, if you pair up some way.
Then. Did you say two or three?
Two. I think it's going to be one group of three. Is that right?
Oh, okay.
No, I think we're exact numbers here. So just, if you don't mind, finding someone. So you can stay where you are, because it will continue, and but we'll welcome Alan, who just arrived. And would some group volunteer to have him join you? What are your group volunteer to have Alan join? Great, thank you. Okay, so Alan, so what we're talking about a little bit is Paramita's wisdom. Oh, you heard some of it. You're up to date because you're listening online. Great. So the next topic is, what reference point do you have for being really available to learn and to discover and to experience when you're going to be doing spiritual care? Do you carry with you a reference point for what it's like to be to not be clinging, not be caught in all the ways you talked about just now? Do you have some memory of a time in your life when you really were present in a full and open learning way? Do you have some, what does it feel like? Is there an experience inside of you of what that feels like when you're that way? In your mind, in your heart, in your body? So there might be many answers, and so that's the same thing. Kind of go back and forth, one point at a time, and then see what comes out of you around this question. Is that question understandable? So, for example, I once sat, I'm just making it up, but I once sat in a park, and I just felt like everything was perfect and great, and I felt so relaxed and so open and so like ready, like it was just the present moment, all there was, and this person sat down next to me, and I was just there for that person. Normally, I kind of tighten up when people sit down, strangers, but that was a reference point. That might be a good way to be a chaplain. So, and what does that feel like? You know, or maybe, some experience, some sense, some way of being. That's a reference point for how you can be. That's different than what you just talked about. Because what you talked about is all the ways interfered with learning, right? So, what's the opposite like? What experience? What if they really being the opposite? And even if it only happened once in your life, you know, there must be something. Or it's a matter of degree also. Don't feel like it has to be all or nothing. It's just a matter of degrees. You know, that reminds me of like this. So,
would that be just something that we've had experienced, like internally, or could it also include maybe like sometimes I have observed other people where I'm like listening maybe to two other people, or say how meditation...
Interesting. Well, my first answer was to say, keep it to yourself.
Okay.
But that was the first thought. But listening to you, I thought, well, some people are really impacted, really big time, by how other people are. That point is a reference that's really inspiring and important. So you decide. Okay, so... And you guys on Zoom, can you nod your head or thumbs up that you understand? Great. Okay. Can you hear me on Zoom? Great. So we come back in the circle. So in a couple of minutes, we'll take a few minutes just for take some comments, what that was like, what you learned, what was useful about it for you. But before we do, maybe we'll do a little reflection. So maybe if you want, it's easier, maybe close your eyes and so you can really become a little internal to kind of think about these questions I'm going to ask you, this question. So the topic of what interferes with your learning, what interferes with you taking in from any situation you're in, and what is the way, what's the reference point or way to be fully available to learn from a situation? Was any of that at play in your conversation with your partner? Were there ways in which you were not really, you could have actually been more available and more learning, or something interfere with being there in that conversation? And was there a reference point that you tapped into here and now that you talked about, certainly, but did you touch into it here and did it change how you were in the conversation? The instruction did not include this as part of the exercise, so it's fine if you didn't. But it might be interesting anyway to take a look and learn. Okay, so then you can open your eyes, and now the floor is open. I don't have anything in particular that, you know, you have to answer. This last exercise, this last little reflection, maybe just private for you. But whatever you'd like to bring up now about this morning so far, anything that you'd like to say or report back, and it'd be nice to hear a range of things that what transpired here for you and what questions you have, anything.
I'll get things kicked off. Yay, volunteering. The first question I really liked because it tied in really well with the Ram Dass book we were asked to read. And what takes me out, and I've noticed this a lot, is role-taking. Teacher, student, you know, healer, chaplain, patient, or client, and getting pulled into that. And kind of the antidote a little bit of that is humility. You know, always assuming the person you have something to teach you. And just any sort of role. And that last question you asked, what I really appreciated was I was still kind of in student note-taking mode, and I had my phone with me, and my partner was like, oh yeah, like, that's brilliant, I'm going to write that down. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, you're totally caught in the role again of, like, absorbing the conditioning of, like, student, or, like, Western student of note-taking. I'm like, put it down, like, and caught myself there. So I really appreciated this last question, which kind of solidified that noticing, that insight of, oh yeah, you're caught in the role of student. Like, put it down and just be here.
Great. Thank you.
Sorry, I didn't know the reflection was done, and I was, like, jumping the gun once again. So that's what I do. I, I tend to talk too much and not listen enough, and not, I'm just so excited or leading in or whatever, New Jersey communication style.
And that's also a gift. It's a multiple variety thing, but remember, it's also a gift to be the way you are.
Thank you, Gil. So what I noticed before and I noticed here today is that it works well for me to be in a dyad or triad where you're taking turns. And I know, I'm not supposed to jump in. So I will wait. I'm better at waiting till they're done. And then if I want to say something, to clarify or ask a question. So I think that model is helpful to me. And what else I noticed, and I hope this doesn't sound too hokey, but I feel such fondness for these two, as I do for all of you. And so I felt such love and compassion in my heart, and so I felt really open and interested and curious in what they were sharing. And so I think, hope I can bring that to someone who, one, is a stranger, or two, I may be feeling judgmental of, for one reason or another, but try to tap into that. Great. Those feelings.
Thank you.
Be helpful.
I have this idea that if you put the mic back in the middle when you're finished, it's a little easier for people to feel the invitation to take it.
All right, now that it is in the middle.
And those of you on Zoom, if you want to raise your Zoom hand or somehow, you can speak too.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this conversation.
Maybe hold it a little bit closer.
Oh, green light is on. So yeah. Okay, I really enjoyed the conversation with Kristen on these prompts. One of the things I noticed was that about the reference point for when you're fully present. That we were sharing a couple of things, and she shared my experiences with her retreat when she was fully present. Then, even before she completed her main point there, I was already thinking about the next thing I'm going to say. And I had a really similar kind of experience in Vipassana 10-day silent retreat where I felt magical, right? So I was eager to share my experience as such, and then I was like, oh shit, I'm doing the same thing again. So that was kind of interesting. Yeah. So
great. It's great, great that you saw it. That's the precious part, knowing what we're doing, catching it.
Yeah, thank you.
So, Sri, I want to respond to that. I couldn't tell, actually. I thought you were listening the whole time. So I don't know whether it helps, but I think we're using very high levels of criteria, definitely, for this class. But I was like, oh, wow, he's so good listening to me. So, but yet I was doing the same thing to you. I was also, at the end, I'm like, the impulse to relate is so strong. In order to indicate that I had heard what you said, because in this format, if we're making point, I was like, oh no, what if he thinks I wasn't listening the whole time? However, I very much like Barbara, I really appreciated this format, and then I wondered in normal conversations, like, wow, I make so many points and points after point, and if there's one thing I can implement, it is to make one point and then pause and let the other person speak.
Wonderful. Thank you. Oh, yes, I'm sorry, Sharon. I have help tracking it. So go ahead, Sharon. Let's see. if we don't hear you, let's say, why don't we hear you? We heard you before, so nothing has changed. The computer is not muted, and is the slider still up? We had before. Nothing has changed. No, she's not muted. And let's try this here. So. I think that was a problem. Yes, I had. Hang on, I'm going to put this back in. Okay, now you can boom into the room.
No,
you still can't zoom. Okay, so now go ahead, speak now.
All right. Is it working now?
Yes.
Okay. Well, this is what I'm going to say. So the format of going back and forth is very creative. And when I started, for instance, about what inhibits my availability, it was anxiety, fear, self-judgment. And then as the rounds went back and forth, I got to what was so emotionally essential for me, which is that I'm afraid of hurting the other person. So it's really all I intended to say about that. Thank you.
So to me, it seems like a very important understanding. And you don't have to answer my question, but the question is, now that you see such an essential thing, what next?
Well, the first thing that occurs to me is to recognize it as conditioning and create an atmosphere of kindness and forgiveness and gentleness for myself.
Great. Very nice.
Yeah.
Thank you. So, thank you for this. I hope that the lessons for this exercise is something that you are valuable for you. But one of the valuable things about the exercise is the exercise itself, the prompt. This is something you might want to keep close to you and ask yourself these two questions regularly. And as you go through chaplaincy and, to go through life. So thank you. So let's take a 15-minute break. And we'll start again here at 11 o'clock on the hour. And if maybe Sharon or AJ, if you could stay on for just a minute, I'll see if we can figure out the sound things. Maybe we don't need to have the come through the speakers, but let's try again. So let's take a break.